Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live today from our affiliate WTKG in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Tip of the hat to Angie and Phil and everybody here, and thank you very much for the use of a studio. It's great to be here, and great to be here in Michigan. I'm flying home back to Oregon tonight. Spent the weekend here, and it was snowing like crazy when I came in. I don't know if it's slowed down a little bit. The fellow who threw the shoes, both of his shoes, George W. Bush, in Iraq, throwing a shoe and calling him a dog, the two things that people did to Saddam's statue after it was felled that were highly praised by Rumsfeld et al., these are the two greatest insults in the Arab world, in the Muslim world, that are possible. And it looks like this guy could serve prison time unless George Bush personally withdraws his criminal complaint against him for attempted assault. And if he doesn't, there are a lot of people in the Middle East who are scratching their heads going, this could get really big and really nasty. This is very, very interesting. So there's that. Governor Blago looks like he was the governor and the boss from hell, and he has no plans of resigning today or tomorrow, according to his spokesperson, and is trying to play governor. We'll see how that goes and where that goes. And Wall Street shenanigans might be bringing down, this Ponzi scheme guy might be bringing down a whole lot more than just Wall Street. And so a lot to talk about as we go through the day. But to start out, this an interesting report, Fox News, in fact, making the report today. The number of reported attacks against gay people, LGBT people, increased 24% last year over the year before, and is expected to rise again this year after a rash of attacks in recent months, according to the New York City Anti-Violence Project. That's the tip of the iceberg of this whole debate, and frankly, in my opinion, this whole debate over gay marriage that is being held. Newsweek this week has a cover story, The Religious Case for Gay Marriage, and in which, a number of arguments are put forward. The Bible, the Old Testament, marriage is defined by and large as a polygamous arrangement or a property arrangement. Jesus and Paul basically said, don't get divorced. Not so much don't get married. Neither one of them ever got married. In fact, speaking of role models. And there's no specific injunction against or advocacy for gay marriage. There are in Leviticus a couple of specific injunctions against homosexuality, largely between men. But in any case, it's really stirring up a lot of controversy. And one of the folks particularly incensed by it was Lou Engel. He is an evangelical leader, the founder of The Call. TheCall.com is the website, one of the leading organizers of the Prop 8 events, the pro Prop 8 events in California. And Lou Engel is on the line with us. Hey, Lou, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, it's good to be with you today.
Glad to have you, sir. So given how – I'm assuming you read the new Newsweek article because you wrote a pretty thoughtful and thorough rebuttal of it. I'm assuming that that's the case?
Well, yeah. I mean, we were amazed at the brazen spirit and really dishonoring handling of the scriptures – And who is Newsweek to be able to be the new priest declaring what is truth like this? It's kind of crazy.
Well, you know, I have a number of friends who have been married outside the church. Louise and I were married in a church, but, you know, I know a number of people who are married by justice of peace, in justice of peace ceremonies, where there is no religious component. It's a purely contractual agreement that that provides for the transfer of property, visiting people in hospitals, you know, all those kinds of things. We call that marriage, just like we call marriage in a church. What's wrong with civil marriage? And I think we have to use the word marriage because it's in so many laws. What's wrong with civil marriage being available to gay people? I mean, why shouldn't they have the right to be as happy or as miserable, if you wanted to take, you know, the cheap shot joke at it, as the rest of us?
Well, the bottom line is this. They're calling for civil rights, or it's a justice movement. But, see, scripturally speaking, that justice must align with morality or righteousness, or else it's really not a justice movement. So what we have in civil unions or in a marriage of gays, they say it's a justice movement, but it is not a moral movement. That's where this is where we take a stand and say, hey, we're not against people. We're not against people's rights, but we are taking a stand that this is not a moral right. We don't have the moral right for a pedophile to marry a boy. We don't have a moral right.
This has nothing to do with pedophilia. That is such a wrong thing to say. I mean, that's where you get into the screaming homophobia. That's the kind of stuff that causes people to beat up on gays. That's the kind of vicious hate speech that offends Americans. That is anti-American, Lou Engel, to compare homosexuality with pedophilia. That is anti-American. That is obscene, frankly.
What we're doing is we're changing the moral boundaries one after another after another.
Yes, we said that it is okay for people of different races to marry. We said that in the 1960s. We said back, 500 years ago or so that, although not just in the United States, actually about 100 years ago in the United States, we said, a man can't have more than one wife, or a woman can't have more than one husband. We've been changing the definitions of marriage over and over again in this country.
But it doesn't make it. It doesn't make it right. And if you're going to compare,
so
it
you think we should go back to the biblical definition where a guy can have five wives, or in the case of David, 700 wives, sir?
I didn't hear you because I was talking.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, okay, what were you saying then? Because I didn't hear you because I was talking.
I was saying the black people in this nation have stood up against same-sex marriage and says you can't compare it to the race issue, which you're trying to do.
Some have and some haven't.
Don't use my skin to justify your sin. That's what they've said. It's not the same thing as the civil rights movement because it's not moral. That's what we're trying to say. There are boundaries of morality that have to be held up in society. And in this case, we're just breaking down boundary after boundary after boundary. I'm not angry or mad at any homosexual. I'm simply saying, for the sake of a nation, let's hold moral truth. Even if we fail in it, at least we have a boundary.
Lou, I don't know how old you are, but I'm old enough to remember a time in this country when it was considered immoral, and there were people on the radio. And in fact, I was working in radio at the time, and I remember it well in the 1970s. There were people on the radio talking about how it was immoral, and particularly in the 60s, you had Strom Thurmond on the floor of the United States Senate. It was immoral that a white man and a black woman, or a white woman and a black man might marry, or that a black person might be able to walk through the same door and sit in the same restaurant as a white person. That was the paramount issue of morality in our society. And ultimately, we look back on that and said, that was pretty sick and twisted. How is it any different to say if somebody is born gay, and I think that that's basically what this is going to boil down to, if somebody is born gay, why should they be excluded from the mainstream of society?
Well, first of all, it was immoral for Strom Thurmond to speak out about that, because there was no – the issue of black and white was not a moral issue for marriage.
But he used the Bible to justify it.
Yeah, they were wrong because they are twisting the scriptures like Newsweek twisting the scriptures. The fact is that God created man and a woman, and there's no scientific evidence that says that the gays are born that way. There are choices, as black leaders have said. He says, you know, no one's changed their skin colors, but there's thousands that have come out of a homosexual lifestyle and changed their lives.
So, Lou, did you decide at some point in your life to become heterosexual?
What's that?
Did you decide at some point in your life that you were only attracted to women and you had no interest in men?
No, I haven't. No, I did not decide that.
Okay, then what makes you think that somebody else at the age of 5 or 10 or, you know, whatever, when most people start becoming aware of sexuality, is making a conscious decision?
Well, because the scriptures and the Word of God that we stand with declare that it is wrong and that these kinds of things are a choice of morality of which people will be held accountable for their choices. Just like adultery.
I'm not defending adultery, and that same scripture says eating shellfish is an equal abomination.
Well, I'm talking New Testament, and I'm saying there's the New Testament has very clear guidelines of what is right, what is wrong. Okay. To mess with those guidelines, I believe, is not good for society, and ultimately...
Lou, we're going to have to leave it at that. Lou Engel, thecall.com, the website. Thanks, Lou.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party, and it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
Did you know there's a TV and computer manufacturer headquartered right here in Portland, and they have an outlet store?
Really? In Portland?
You can get great deals on open box floor models, factory reconditioned products with warranty, and discontinued items with clearance pricing. Like a two-go Celeron laptop with Linux at the Nexus Factory Outlet, you can get one for just $299. Go to NexusFactoryOutlet.com to check it out.
NexusFactoryOutlet.com for the best deals on flat screens and computers? Thanks!
Are the monthly payments you're receiving from a structured settlement not enough to keep up with your expenses? Do you need cash now? Well, now you can get the future money owed to you in a lump sum. For free information, call Peachtree Settlement Funding, 1-800-300-7153.
The money I was getting every month from my lawsuit just wasn't enough. Now we have the cash to finally pay off our credit cards.
Find out how you can turn your structured settlement into cash now, when you need it most, to pay off the bills that are piling up now.
Our adjustable rate mortgage payments were out of control. If we hadn't gotten this money, we might have ended up losing our house.
Getting this money was like getting my life back. Now I know I can pay my bills every month.
If you have a structured settlement, get the future money you have coming to you now. For your free information, call Peachtree Settlement Funding at 1-800-300-7153. That's 1-800-300-7153. 1-800-300-7153.
Don't miss this weekend of mega savings at Kohl's two-day mega sale. Plus, get extra mega savings during power hours, Friday 3 to 11 p.m. and Saturday 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Like Missy's Fashions at a mega 50 to 60% off. Or great kids apparel at 50 to 55% off. Your favorite bras are 50% off. And get extra savings on shoes and boots.
plus stock up on frames at a mega 55% off. You've got to hurry to Kohl's two-day mega sale this Friday and Saturday at all Kohl's stores and Kohl's.com. Kohl's, expect great things.
Finding something you can rely on is easier than you think. I'm Norm Miller, chairman of Interstate Batteries, and our batteries are just around the corner from you. Sold at over 200,000 retailers. Heck, we're in every county in the U.S. And that means it's easier than ever to own the Interstate Battery peace of mind. Because with one of ours, you'll hear this. Instead of this. Call 1-800-CRANK-IT or visit InterstateBatteries.com to find the dealer nearest you. Tested. Trusted. Interstate Battery.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Taxes cut on the Capitol floor. Never took us down to support. Equality of life they cannot afford. Now how can that be reason?
Yeah, I'm confused. Let's see. The Bible says I can sell my daughter into slavery. I have two. How much could I make? I mean, you know, do we really want to go back to biblical law? I just don't think so. In fact, I think, you know, one of the big problems around the world is the people who want to go back to biblical law, particularly... Well, not particularly, but, you know, most in our face at the moment. I mean, we could go back, you know, a few hundred years, and most in our face at the moment would have been Christian biblical law. But at the moment, Islamic biblical law, as it were, Quranic law, is creating a few problems. But anyhow, this is in the wire services today, as we like to say. Yankees offer to sign Iraqi hurler in their latest bid to beef up their pitching rotation for the 2009 season. The New York Yankees today offered Iraqi journalist Muntadhar El-Zaidi a three-year deal worth $32 million. The right-hander El-Zaidi, 28, impressed the Yankee scouts with his performance in Baghdad yesterday when he threw both of his shoes at President George W. Bush. While neither of the shoes hit their target, both throws had great velocity and good movement, said Yankee owner Hank Steinbrenner. The first shoe, he said, was high and outside, but the second one is right down the middle. Yankee boss said he was also impressed with Mr. Zaidi's fighting spirit when Secret Service agents tackled him. That could come in handy when we have a series with Boston, he said. Yeah. Tip of the hat to Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com, for the news that's not quite the news of the day. You know, a few other things that I just want to cover, and then, you know, we'll take your calls on this whole variety of things from gay marriage. This is the issue that Newsweek is bringing up again. And, of course, there's all the battles on Prop 8. And there's a lot. I am so impressed by the pushback on Prop 8. And we'll see how this goes. On Friday, when I was on Keith Olbermann's show Countdown with David Schuster, and thank you, tip of the hat to David Schuster and his producers for inviting me on. I mentioned Alexander Hamilton's report on manufacturers, 1791 report on manufacturers to the United States Congress, which defined for the first time an industrial policy for the United States. And I said it was a six-step program. It's actually an 11-step program. I was pretty burned out at that. I had done 8 straight hours of talk radio on Friday, literally 8 straight hours of live talk radio. And I was just not I was tired. Anyhow, so the 11 step. I just want to go through this very quickly. This, and you can Google this, Alexander Hamilton. You can. It's in the public domain. Alexander Hamilton's report on manufacturers to the United States Congress, 1791, and he laid out this policy which we adopted in 1792 and we kept until the last 26 years. And over the last 26 years, we have been conservatives and really largely transnational corporations, shills for large transnational corporations who don't want the United States to have a national industrial policy because they do want to be able to essentially strip mine this country of its wealth and you know, take a chunk of that wealth and in exchange for cheap labor overseas. In other words, maximize their profit. And so what if it hurts America? And so I want to go through these things just very quickly. And also I want to mention that, in my opinion, in this whole thing where you've got Southern senators from states in which Toyota, Nissan, Mercedes, Honda, Hyundai have factories, States which have paid $100,000, $150,000, $200,000, $255,000 per job to get those companies to site in those states. These senators don't want the United States Congress to loan the big three $5,000 per job to save 3 million American jobs. That's right. You divide $15 billion by 5 million, or by 3 million jobs. 3 million is 3 with 6 zeros after it. 15 billion is 15 with 9 zeros after it. You knock off 6 zeros from both those numbers, you got 15 with 3 zeros after it. 15,000 divided by 3, which is $5,000 per job. That's way too much. These same guys who thought it was just fine to spend $250,000 per job to bring Mercedes to Alabama. That points out, that just shows you this has got nothing to do with a national industrial policy for the United States, as Alexander Hamilton talked about. It's got nothing to do with the cost of labor, which is frankly only about 10%, 10 to 12% of the cost of an automobile, and much less than that of the actual sticker price when at, you know, with markup and everything at the dealer. It's got nothing to do with that. It's got nothing to do with labor. This is the reason why when they bailed out the banks to the tune of $300 billion, nobody said, well, how much are the bankers making? How much do they pay those tellers over at Wells Fargo? Nobody asked the question because they're not unionized. This is about busting the unions. And they say, well, no, it's not about busting the unions. Look, people at the Toyota factory and the Honda factory and the Hyundai factory in Alabama and Tennessee and South Carolina, they're making, you know, within a dollar of what the UAW is making in Detroit. Yes, you know why? Because the UAW exists. If these guys can drive a stake through the heart of the UAW, if they can kill off the UAW, then those $25, $26, $27 an hour jobs that are just a buck or two less, those jobs down in Alabama that are just paying a buck or two less than Detroit pays, those jobs without the threat of the UAW coming in and unionizing Hyundai and Nissan and Toyota and Honda and Mercedes, without that threat, within 5 years, you're going to see everybody manufacturing in the auto industry in this country making $15 an hour or $10 an hour or $7.50 an hour. Because once the union's gone, that's the only thing to stop it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Four minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. I'm telling you, boy, that's going to be a battle when that thing comes up. Get ready. You can learn more about it over at Teamster.org and all about the Teamsters as well. It's Teamster, singular, no S, .org. 1-866-303-2270 is our telephone number. And let's see here. Karen in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Karen, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Hello?
Good morning, or good afternoon here in Michigan. It's
okay.
It's about 12:35. What's up?
I wanted to talk to you about Alexander Hamilton's prescriptions for developing a manufacturing base.
Yes.
I tried to advocate for tariffs last year at meetings of the Democratic Party Platform Committee, and I failed because of concern for workers abroad, but also because I didn't really understand how tariffs would impact the United States now in the context of our current global situation, and of course now is even more now, right?
Right.
And I was concerned about what would be the consequences for our exports, for example. Would prohibitive tariffs be imposed on them abroad in retaliation?
Sure. They always have been. Countries, and in fact they are right now. Most of the countries in the world charge import tariffs on U.S.-made goods right this minute. We just don't charge import tariffs on foreign-made goods. Here's the big number to keep in mind, Karen. 40%. 40% of all international trade, what is defined as international trade under the World Trade Organization, this statistic's a couple of years old, so it's actually probably higher than that right now, but roughly 40% of all trade in and out of the United States that we call international trade is actually intra-company trade. In other words, a company here in the United States, Dell with their computers, or Hewlett-Packard with their printers, or pretty much anything, right? Anything that you buy that's made outside the United States, which is almost everything. That company, that U.S. company, Hewlett-Packard, for example, you know, Carly Fiorina, all the Republicans love her. They say, isn't that great what she did? But what she did was she said, we're going to build factories in China. We're going to manufacture our products in China, and we're going to sell them to ourselves to resell in the United States. And that's intra-company trade. And really, it's got nothing to do with international trade. It's not China having some sort of, you know, inherent or intrinsic advantage like Thailand would, for example, if they were selling carved sandalwood. You know, there's other than cheap labor, it's just the arbitrage of labor. It's the brokering, the buying and selling of labor. Nothing more, nothing less. And it's purely and simply a way of devastating America's industrial base. And it's exactly what Alexander Hamilton warned against. And the only remedy for it are the 11 points that he put forward, which are, number one, protecting duties on those foreign articles, which are the rivals of the domestic ones intended to be encouraged. And these are specific caveats, and I'm reading right from Hamilton's piece. Number two, prohibition of rival articles or duties equivalent to prohibitions. This is in those areas, he says, it might almost be said by the principles of distributive justice, certainly by the duty of endeavor to secure their own citizens a reciprocity of advantages. In other words, building those industries that we think are important here. Number three, prohibitions on the exportation of the materials of manufacture. In other words, he says its immediate operation is to abridge the demand and keep down the price, the lack of this. So it's really
a really interesting one, isn't that one? I thought was fascinating because of what you've pointed out about the export of raw materials right now.
Yeah, we are now the world's largest exporter of raw materials. We have become a third world country. And what Hamilton said is keep that stuff in your own country and manufacture it into finished goods. Number four, pecuniary bounties. This is where you actually if you charge a 1% duty on an, in fact, let me read it. A 1% duty on a foreign trade converted into a bounty on the domestic will have the equal effect of a duty of 2%. So you don't have to have such a high tariff on imported goods, but you can take the money from that tariff and spiff a domestic manufacturer to help them get big and strong. This is exactly, by the way, what the Japanese government did with Toyota, which enabled the development of the Lexus. Tom Friedman had it so wrong in his book, Olive Tree and the Lexus. He never bothered to get the history of the Lexus. And it was a combination of tariffs and bounties that created the Lexus, that allowed Toyota to build that car. So anyhow, that's number four. Number five is premiums. He says these are a nature allied to bounties, though distinguishable from them in some important features. Bounties are to the whole quantity of an article produced or manufactured or exported. Premiums are to reward some particular excellence or superiority. In other words, there's some particular area that you want to really spiff. Number six, the exemption of materials of manufacturers from duty. In other words, there are some things that you don't want to have tariffs on. Number seven, drawbacks of the duties which are imposed on the materials of manufacturers. So if you're going to have a tariff on importing raw materials, then you want to basically have a rebate against that for people who are manufacturing in this country and, you know, doing the right thing. Number eight, the encouragement of new intentions and discoveries at home. This is basically your patent and trademark laws. Number nine, judicious regulations for the inspection of manufactured commodities. We have none of this, or we have very little of this right now. We inspect very little of what comes into this country. Number 10, the facilitating of pecuniary remittances from place to place. In other words, have a bank, a national bank, and this is Ellen Brown's thing about let's buy the Fed and have a national bank that facilitates international trade. By and large, we already have that, though. And number 11, the facilitating of the transportation of commodities, which is building a transportation infrastructure, which by and large we've done. So that's Hamilton's 11 points. And that's what we had in this country until Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, and George Bush Jr. took it apart. In large part, a process driven by the Republican Party. And Karen, I share your frustration with the Democratic Party not understanding that this is what built an industrial economy. They're just terrified to go down this road. And oddly, it traditionally was the Republicans who were in favor of tariffs and the Democrats who were opposed to them. In fact, Franklin Roosevelt ran on a free trade platform, although he never executed it. He backed away from it as soon as he became elected. And Hoover, you know, passed Smoot-Hawley, which raised tariffs about 3%. But in the 1960s and 1970s, those roles kind of reversed, and the Democrats just stopped having an opinion, and the Republicans became against tariffs because that was when the Republican Party was largely taken over by large transnational corporations. Karen, I got to move along to other callers and other topics, but thank you for the call, and thanks. You know, I think, frankly, so important to America. Ivana in Detroit, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Ivana.
Hi, Tom. Let me just thank you for being on the radio since 1968. I love to listen to you.
Well, thank you. There have been large gaps in there, but that's when I started. So what's up?
Tom, I heard the conversation you had with that evangelist. I believe Engel, his name was?
Yes.
And I can't believe how narrow-minded he is, and I'm sure many other that I have heard. For him to classify homosexualism as immorality, it's beyond belief. It's plain ridiculous.
By biblical definitions, it is. But so is eating shellfish. So is cutting your hair. So is men not having beards. If we want to go back to Deuteronomy or Leviticus, there is a long list. As I recall, it's like 635 items. And, you know, there are some groups who still hold to many of those things, the Hasidic movement within the Jewish community, for example. But they're really the exception to the rule. And even the Hasids would not say that the United States should base our law on Leviticus. You know, it's just they're just saying this is the way it is for us. And if this guy were to say, you know, this is how it is for him in his church, I'd have no problem with that. You know, exactly. Don't let gays get married in your church. That's fine. They're not going to want to. But we're talking about civil law here.
It's not even about civil law the way I look at it. It's about the human factor.
Yeah.
It's not like these people woke up one day and decided we're going to be gays or we're going to be lesbians because that's the way it's
Well, when I said, you know, I wouldn't have a problem if in his church he said we don't want gays to marry there. And then I immediately rethought it because I would be very offended if any church said, you know, we're not going to have interracial marriages in this church. Although the Mormon Church essentially said that right up until just, you know, a couple of decades ago. But blacks couldn't be priests in the church, which is basically what you become when you become an adult. Anyway. If this really and truly is a civil rights issue, and I believe it is, and we're going to carry that logic, then I would hope that churches would embrace this right across the board. Although I think, you know, there is some point where you say, okay, is this going to be with the force of law, anti-discrimination laws or not? And that's the road down which the church leaders are looking at and getting terrified. I don't know. Ivana, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Christy in Miami, Florida. Hey, Christy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to basically keep going with what the woman before me was talking about. This whole moral issue, it is coming down to a moral issue, and I find that kind of ridiculous. We have a separation of church and state for a reason.
Yes.
So because of that, that is why premarital sex isn't illegal. Many congregations don't condone that, but it's a human right.
Well, it actually used to be illegal in a lot of states. I mean, you know, when Louise and I were first living together in Michigan, it was called living in – I mean, there were laws at that time in the late 60s, early 70s in many states against cohabitation. But see, our definitions of morality have changed, and I think it's a healthy thing. In fact,
and I think one of the great things about being American is that I have the right. I did not grow up in a religious household. I had the right to develop my own moral compass.
Yeah.
So to take that right away from me, even though I do not believe in any of other religious beliefs.
Yep. Here's the argument, Christy, and the direction of the thread. And thank you for the call. These folks are saying that morality is derived from reading a book. From reading the Bible and following those teachings. And I would submit to you that it actually goes in the other direction, that the Bible was a reflection of societies, of the social consensus of what morality was at that time, and that morality comes out of society, not out of a book.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Money's tight, and things don't look too great anytime soon. Now, did you know you're sitting on cold, hard cash right now in your home? No, I'm not talking about a garage sale. I'm talking about old jewelry, gold, silver, platinum. It's sitting in a drawer gathering dust. Cash for Gold will turn your unwanted or broken jewelry into cash fast. Cash for Gold is a direct refiner of precious metals. You just request a refiner's return pack. Place your unwanted gold or jewelry inside the pack and drop it in the mailbox. Zip, zip, quick. You'll get a check with your total satisfaction guaranteed. That's right. You can actually get your items back if you're not fully satisfied. Now that's the kind of service you'd expect from America's number one gold buyer. Visit cashforgold.com. That's cash, the number four, gold.com. Or call 800-441-0792. 800-441-0792. 800-441-0792.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth?
It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KPOJ. 620KPOJ.com.
Came the toughest jobs with a new 6D series utility tractors from John Deere. From 100 to 140 horsepower, cab or open station, two-wheel drive or four, all with tough John Deere engines and easy shifting transmissions. Get fixed rate financing as low as 0% for 36 months at participating dealers now through February 2nd. Financing subject to approved credit on John Deere credit installment plan. See your John Deere dealer for details.
Visit your local John Deere dealer or go to johndeere.com to find the dealer nearest you.
IBM Express Advantage.
Hi. I probably shouldn't even be calling. I mean, IBM is so big, and we're a mid-sized business.
Well, we all put our pants on one leg at a time, right? IBM Express Advantage is designed specifically for mid-sized companies.
Really? No, but I can't spend a lot for something complicated.
You might be making a mountain out of a molehill. See, our business partners build custom solutions that won't break the bank. They make things simple.
Nothing simple anymore.
Candy from a baby. Shooting fish in a barrel.
You lost me.
Express Advantage makes things easier, so you can stay cool as a cucumber.
Oh.
There's a huge range of hardware, software, and services designed and priced with you in mind, like a well-fitted suit.
Got an analogy for sign me up?
Actually, we don't.
Oh.
But I found a partner for you.
Oh.
See? Easy as pie. A breeze.
Snap.
Yes. Licking a stamp.
IBM Express Advantage helps mid-sized companies solve tough problems simply. Go to IBM.com/IBM Access or call the concierge at 877-IBM-ACCESS to find the business partner that's right for you.
Here's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ.
Zoo Lights, presented by Boeing, is back at the Oregon Zoo. See the zoo transformed into a winter wonderland, aglow in a sea of a million lights. Animated animals, entertainment, a holiday buffet, and a lighted zoo train make Zoo Lights Portland's premier family holiday event. Information at 620kpoj.com, keyword zoo. Support the Sustainable Business Network this holiday season. Experience the fun and fulfillment that comes from an authentic place, your own community. And choose holiday gifts from locally owned stores, restaurants, and service providers. Info at 620kpoj.com, keyword local. Looking for some local fun and festive events to attend this holiday season? Look no further than 620kpoj.com, keyword festive. You'll find information on Portland Saturday Market, Zoo Lights, the Oregon Zoo, the Pittock Mansion, and more. It's all at 620kpoj.com, keyword festive.
And that's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Oh, but don't you know there's a war on Christmas? This is so absurd. Anyhow, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 9.5 minutes before the hour, broadcasting live from Grand Rapids, from the studios of WTKG in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And also a thanks to my brother Steve and Tammy, his significant other, for putting me up for the last couple nights at their home in this neighborhood. And to my other brothers, we just had a great weekend with family and visiting my mom, and who's just not doing so well right now, but it was great to see her. Anyhow, Nichelle in San Francisco. Hey, Nichelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I was listening to you speak with, I think, Reverend Hagel, and just wanted to comment about that. Really don't appreciate him using that African-American people just really don't support Prop 8, because I am African-American and I do support Prop 8 because I have a son that's gay and I have a daughter that's transgender, and I absolutely support them.
So you support them and you're opposed to Proposition 8.
Yes, they should be able to marry whomever they want to marry. And also this thing of, you know, African-American people just support this religion. I personally feel like religion should be taken out of it, okay, because people use religion to support whatever they want to support or to work oppose whatever they want to oppose, and so it needs to be taken out of the equation. Personally, also, I feel like this whole thing, because of the African-American community and religion, Christianity, is, if you look at the statistics, HIV and AIDS, you know, affect our community more than any other community, and there is a connection between that and religion, because within the African American community, they do not accept homosexuality, and so many African American men who are gay have to hide their homosexuality. They live these double lives, you know, exposing their wives and girlfriends to HIV and AIDS because they're living double lives, because they can't be openly gay within the community. And it's happened within my own family. I've seen it happen to my son, my daughter, where they just, my family will not accept them. Fortunately for them, I accept them. And so they've been able to be open about their sexuality. And so I just wanted to call in and state to that and put that on the record that not all African American people support Prop 8, okay?
Yeah, well said,
Nichelle. I, for one, don't.
Okay. Thank you very much. Very well said. Nichelle, thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. William in New Mexico. Hey, William, what's up?
I was looking a little bit at the senators that blocked the auto bailout bill.
Yeah.
And I kind of remembered back in 2004 when the Department of Labor changed the overtime rules.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the states that do not have superseding state legislation concerning overtime rules, every single one of those states are states like Mr. Corker's Tennessee, South Carolina. So basically this is more about decreasing auto manufacturing labor costs across the board.
Yep.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the only way that they can do that is to do away with the threat that the UAW represents to those factories. The only reason that Mercedes, that Nissan, that Hyundai, that Honda, that Toyota, the only reason that those foreign companies who are taking their profits out of the United States,
right,
the only reason that those companies are paying anywhere from $25 to $30 an hour for labor is because they are scared to death that the UAW is going to come in and unionize their shops. And so they're paying about, you know, within spitting distance of what UAW workers are making in Detroit and other cities where they're unionized. If the UAW was to go away, which is the prayer of these guys, they want to destroy the UAW, they want to destroy the unions in general, but in particular the UAW is one of the strongest of the unions. If they could destroy the UAW, then you will see, we have seen this in industry after industry after industry, you will see wages in auto manufacturing start a real rapid decline down into the $10 to $15 an hour range. And frankly, I think after that, you'll see it go into a slow decline down to around the $8, $9, $10 an hour range. And you'll see benefits go away. You'll see pensions go away. You'll see overtime rules, as you pointed out, go away. This is all about jacking up the profits for the wealthy, you know, basically the investors, the stockholders, and in the case of Chrysler, the private individuals who own that corporation, at the expense of labor and destroying the power of labor in the United States. And from the politician's point of view, It's also about destroying a labor movement, which is one of the only movements in the United States that has a coherent structure to it that can push back on all these regressive Republican policies. And they should. Liz in Valley Glen, California, listening on K-Talk in L.A. Hey, Liz, what's up?
Hi. Originally, I called to say we should start a movement to send pictures of shoes to George W. in Washington.
Send what a cool idea. I'll bet within the next week somebody on the Internet will be offering postcards with pictures of shoes that you can, you know, you can buy like 50 of them for $5 and give them to your friends to fill out and send to the White House or send to the Bush Memorial Library and Evangelism Center.
But I just want to tag on about the unions. I didn't believe in unions when I came out here, and I went to work for the court system in California. And I saw what they were doing to the clerks, and so I joined the union. And let me tell you, you think you're going to get truth and justice in the court system. Those judges were looking out for themselves. They didn't care about their clerks who made them look good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if the unions do really help people. And
yeah, all people. My brother made just a brilliant observation to me as we were driving in to the radio station here this morning. He works for the Supreme Court here in Michigan, and the Supreme Court ruled that they're the only branch of government that doesn't have to have unionized employees. So he's not a member of the employee of the government employees union, but they pay the exact same benefits as all the other branches of government here in the state, you know, pensions and health insurance and everything else, because there's a union. And Steve said, you know, all these guys who are not union members, they say, I don't need a union, I'm just doing just fine. They don't realize that if the unions go away, they're suddenly not going to do just fine anymore, because it's the union, the competition of the union, the threat of the union that is causing employers to continue paying those benefits to non-unionized employees so that they don't have to worry about those employees unionizing, because they're saying, hey, you're getting what the union employees are making. But you get rid of the union, we're back to Scrooge and Bob Cratchit. That's the world we will have in the United States. And that's just fine with the conservatives.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, as the economy continues to plunge into the toilet, as we slide into the second Republican Great Depression in 100 years, in my humble opinion, the direct result of Coolidge Hoover-onomics, in the modern parlance known as Reaganomics, one of the proposals to bring us out of this that has been put forward by the Obama administration, or the incoming, soon-to-be Obama administration, shall we say. George and Laura don't want them using Blair House a little bit early. So we'll see if, you know, in the election of 1800, there was actually speculation that John Adams would refuse to vacate the White House and let Thomas Jefferson into it. Seriously, I mean, there would... People were waiting to see if Adams was going to have, you know, armed buddies keep him in power and ignore the will of the people. And he didn't. He left, although he and Jefferson never again met in their lives. Jefferson was the vice president at that time, by the way. I have a feeling that George Bush is all too happy to get out of the White House this time. Anyhow, one of the proposals being put forward by the incoming Obama, soon-to-be administration, is to generate a lot of green jobs, and not just actually green jobs, but even beyond green jobs, infrastructure projects. You know, let's build bridges, let's build schools, let's build hospitals, let's rebuild the industrial infrastructure of this country that has been by and large wasting away ever since Ronald Reagan came into power, to the point where our schools are falling apart, our hospitals are in some cases not even safe particularly, it's certainly not state of the art. and our highways are full of potholes, and our air traffic control system is creaky and cranky and overtaxed. Our rail system is pretty much outside of the Northeast Corridor, pretty much non-existent, and even that is an anachronism, and so on. And they're getting some pushback from this, and it's interesting from feminist groups and. Carrie Lucas, Vice President for Policy and Economics at the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org, on the line with us. Carrie, would you call yourself an anti-feminist or a feminist? I didn't want to characterize you.
You know, I think that it's such a misleading term at this point. I'm certainly a feminist to the extent that feminist means we believe in women's equality. But unfortunately, most of the people out there who seem to be the biggest representatives of feminists have a very different idea of equality than I do, and are really just looking for a government to expand and to specifically help women or at the expense of men. So to that degree, I'm out of step with most of the feminists out there.
Okay. So your argument, you wrote this op-ed piece. People can find it over at the Independent Women's Forum's website, IWF.org. Do Obama's green jobs discriminate against women? I don't know what the, if this is the title. This time, Hirschman's feminist whining makes a point, but not exactly the one she intended to make. Is that the title or the subtitle?
That was on National Review Online.
Okay, National Review Online. And in this article, you point out that Obama's talking about spending a lot of money on construction, and that only 9% of construction jobs are held by women. And therefore, he's being anti-woman in his spending. Do I have that right?
Well, no, actually, this was an article in the New York Times written by a feminist author who's pretty famous, Linda Hirschman, who's right. written things telling women to get out of that stay-at-home moms aren't pulling their fair share, and basically that women need to act like men and work the same amount as men do if we were going to achieve true equality. And she wrote something that was really complaining about just how bias or what the Obama jobs package would be in only finding jobs for women. And she was saying, hey, let's expand it. Let's try to target some areas that are female heavy dominated industries. And I was trying to point out the flawed logic of once we start going down that path.
Well, her argument, if I understand it correctly, I didn't read the entire article, but I read a good chunk of it, was that if we put money into construction, you're putting money into jobs that are heavily dominated by men. But we also have an intellectual infrastructure in this country, which has been neglected, that being education in a large part. And if we put money into education, if we gave people free college education, you know, improved our schools and things, those are areas, those are fields where women are more heavily represented than men, and it would balance that out. Isn't there a third argument here which says, you know, most construction these days, and most manufacturing in particular, is, you know, historically was done by men because it involved moving heavy things around, and men tend to have more muscle mass on their bodies than women do. I mean, that's just sort of a biological fact of life. But this, the state of technology and machinery is to the point where most manufacturing jobs don't require enormous amounts of strength anymore. And should we be going back to what we had in this country, you know, 20, 30 years ago, of having what they have all over Europe, where you've got people who don't want to go to college being trained for blue-collar jobs, for apprenticeships, and to have journeyman status, basically, in the trades, and encourage women to get into those areas?
Well, you know, I think that there's been a lot has been tried to encourage women to enter areas like construction and engineering. And I think that, you know, certainly there's a growing number. I'm sure the percentage of women has increased over time that are in construction. But at the end of the day, we've seen time after time that a lot of this attempts to really social engineer people into different jobs runs up against human nature. We've seen there's a lot of evidence that men and women have not only different attributes, as you were mentioning, physical strength, which is less important, but we also have different interests. Women tend to be more interested in things that they find personally fulfilling. They like working with other people. They like working with machinery less in general. So I think that that's going to be a just just as futile an attempt to try to get women, certainly in the short term, you're not going to get really change the overall dynamic of who's in what types of professions. Otherwise, they've already done it already. It's certainly there's been efforts made.
Well, we did it during World War II. You know, Rosie the Riveter was famous. And you could argue, and women, I mean, they built the bombers, they built the tanks, they built, you know, they built the heavy metal stuff that we, you know, dropped bombs from on Hitler and Tojo. But Ruthie Ackerman over in...
I would never suggest that women can't do this. It's that women now have, you know, we have every occupation known to man that you can enter into, and women tend to gravitate away from construction jobs. And is that because of it's considered male-dominated and there's sexism? Well, that probably plays a role in some small percentage, but I think it's just ridiculous to imagine a scenario when we're going to have 50% of construction workers are going to be women.
Yeah, so Kerry Lucas, is your solution to simply say, you know, these feminists are you know, pushing the envelope, what's wrong with construction jobs and giving money to construction jobs, even if that means that more men are going to be employed than women? Or are you suggesting that Obama shouldn't be giving any money to anybody under any circumstances?
More closer to the latter. I think that the real point is that if Hirschman's frustrated that this lack of fairness, that it's only men who are going to benefit from this particular jobs program, and she's focused on, well, then we need a jobs program that's more for teachers and, you know, elementary school workers and preschool workers or whatever, where women are more heavily concentrated. Well, you're going to have some other group that's going to come and say, hey, wait a second, you know, what about me? What about artists out there? I'm sure that there's a lot of people who are suffering.
Well, we did in the 30s. There were arts programs as part of the WPA.
Sure. So when does this stop? When do we just decide that government should employ everyone and we should just forget the private sector entirely and just have government run everything? And I think that's the
Well, I think it stops when the economy comes back, as it did in the 30s. I mean, when the economy comes back, then you pull government back out of it. I mean, that's, you know, John Maynard Keynes 101.
When I was listening to you, I had to wipe a tear away as you were describing the sorry state of our infrastructure and just how neglected it's been over time. And, you know, one of the things that's so, I think, ironic about that is just looking at state government spending over the last few decades has gone just at an absolutely exponential rate. So,
well, you know where most of it's gone. Most of that's gone to Halliburton and Bechtel to build Star Wars and to take down and rebuild Iraq.
I'm talking about state and local governments. State and local governments' budgets have been just growing at a rip-roaring pace.
Reflecting
and you always
inflation.
Want to hear about all this money that's going to things like education. Education, we now spend well in excess of $10,000 per pupil. We always have new programs that are focused on construction and school construction. You look at Washington, D.C., and my goodness, if I had a nickel for every time that a policymaker came out and said, now we're going to invest in schools in Washington, D.C., I'd be quite rich, because they always talk about it. It never happens. There's clearly some lack of efficiency out there. The money's not being used properly. The problem isn't a lack of money. It's government controlling money.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. You people can read your piece over at IWF.org, the Independent Women's Forum. Kerry Lucas, the VP for Policy and Economics. Always good talking with you, Kerry.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Thank you. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
This isn't a political message. It's not a pitch from a pitch man, not brought to you by anything or anyone in particular. It's not a plea, it's not commentary. No, it's merely an idea for you to do with what you will. Let's redefine Christmas. Let's rethink how we give by replacing gifts that seem frivolous with gifts that are charitable and do more good. More on this idea at redefinechristmas.org. It's merely a website with an idea.
Pick up the phone and speak your mind.
One of the things that people like Robert Rubin and Alan Greenspan trade on is this sort of big idea that they know everything.
They don't give a crap about anybody but themselves.
These people get to spout whatever they want to, and it's not questioned except in closed
circles. I'm so disgusted, frustrated, ticked off.
Let us know what you think. Call us at 866-303-2270.
We're listening.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog, what name it could be.
Promise, because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater.
How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw. I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wolfson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning, 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
Results may vary. Additional products and services will be offered for sale.
This is not your father's economy. The old standards of working one job and putting money away towards retirement no longer apply. Today, success or failure depends on your financial IQ. You need to attend a free Rich Dad Education workshop coming to the Portland area. Based on the teachings from the best-selling book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, this 90-minute event will show you how to survive and build security during these hard economic times. We teach you why your house is not an asset. You may not want to diversify. You may not want to invest in 401ks or mutual funds. Saving money will never make you rich. These are just some of Rich Dad's teachings that will change the way you think about money. Attend this free Rich Dad Education training coming to the Portland area December 17th and 18th only. Reserve your place now at richdadeducation.com or call 1-800-680-7976. That's 1-800-680-7976. Register now and receive a free gift just for attending. 1-800-680-7976.
If you've ever wanted a truly spectacular diamond ring, you'll want to visit Jared this weekend. That's because this weekend, when you purchase your diamond at Jared, you'll receive up to $1,000 toward the purchase of a beautiful diamond setting. Choose from thousands of diamonds and have your one-of-a-kind ring created right here at Jared in time for Christmas. Get set in diamonds this weekend for a reward worth up to $1,000. This weekend, only at Jared.
It can only be Jared.
Hey, Skip, what's up?
I just got out of a meeting with Jim.
Yeah, what's up with him lately?
I don't know, he's acting weird.
Yeah, the pointy hat, the striped socks.
Ever since he went to Office Max.
I think he's been elfing himself.
Jim? No way.
Hey, fellas, there you are. Hey, how about we do lunch, huh? What do you say? Come on, just the three of us.
Told you.
Office Max is your headquarters for the holidays. And, of course, don't forget to elf yourself at elfyourself.com. This week only, save $150 on Acer notebooks and get Microsoft Home and Student for only an additional $79.99. See store for details while supplies last.
State Batteries. Cold winter weather can really strain a car battery. Be safe and have yours tested at one of Interstate Batteries' 200,000 dealers nationwide. There's one in every county in the U.S. Find your closest dealer at interstatebatteries.com.
Music Millennium has over 100,000 gift ideas, including the largest recorded music selection in the Northwest, music and movie DVDs, vinyl, vintage toys and games, and other unique gift ideas. Happy holidays from Music Millennium, located at 32nd and East Burnside.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I'm telling you, Muntadir al-Zaidi, the Iraqi journalist who had been earlier arrested and humiliated by American forces earlier in his life, earlier in the last few years, we're still getting the details of his life, throwing his shoes at George Bush and saying, "This is a farewell kiss, you dog. This is from the widows, the orphans, and those who were killed in Iraq." Now, you will recall the photo, the staged photo, by the way, of Iraqis hitting the statue of Saddam Hussein with their shoes. That photo played all over the world, over and over and over again. Huge big deal. This, in my opinion, is also a huge big deal. It's not quite getting the same play, and it's not getting the same kind of play. I don't think most Americans realize that this in the Arab world, this is right up there with somebody taking a bag of excrement and throwing it at Bush here in the United States and calling him one of those words that have to do with mothers and procreation. I mean, it is the worst possible insult that you can hurl at a person, because he has seen so many of his countrymen and women and children die as the result of this sociopath, George W. Bush, this man's charge into war, that back in 1999, 2 years before the Supreme Court installed him as President of the United States, 2 years before that, when his family was getting him ready to run for the presidency, and they hired Mickey Herskowitz, an old family friend from Texas and a famous writer, to ghostwrite George Bush's autobiography, A Charge to Keep. And Herskowitz sat down with George W. Bush, and Bush told him that when his daddy invaded Iraq, he had all his political capital, and he blew it. It's a verbatim quote. And then he went on to say, if I become president, if I have an opportunity to invade Iraq, I'm not going to blow it. And he said he was going to invade, and he was going to get a lot of political capital from that, and that would enable him to pursue the agenda that he was going to have a successful presidency, in his phrase. His agenda, of course, had always been privatizing Social Security, busting the unions, doing away with social legislation, making the government so bankrupt that it's not possible for Democrats to spend any government money on helping people through programs like welfare or aid to education or aid to schools. Or, you know, pretty much aid to anything. The bankrupt the government, conservatives. But all over Iraq now, protests are breaking out, particularly in Sadr City, where the Shiites are saying, you know, this guy speaks for me. We don't want George here. And I just, you know, I want to just say, I honor this guy. George Bush opened the gates of hell in Iraq. And, frankly, Afghanistan. We should have taken the Taliban's offer in the first place when they said, we'll give you Osama bin Laden as long as he goes to a third country rather than the United States. And you can have a trial for him, and if you find him guilty, you can do whatever you want. We will give you to him as long as he goes to a neutral third country. And George W. Bush said, nope. Not going to take that deal, and started dropping bombs on innocent civilians, a process that continues to this day. And no country has ever successfully occupied Afghanistan, and we're not going to. Mark my words. And if Obama thinks that he's going to expand that war and he's going to make it some great noble activity, military activity, he's going to come up against the exact same problem Lyndon Johnson did when he tried to do that in Vietnam. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Tom in Pittsburgh. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom.
Hey.
Hey, I was going to talk to you about tariffs, but just after what you said, I saw an interview on Zakaria's GPS with candidate Obama, and the question is, what would you do with the Taliban and the terrorists that they harbor? And the answer was, wipe them out.
Yeah.
And then you could see Fareed nod, like, okay, this guy has got what it needs to be president.
Yeah. And see, I think that the actual answer is informed by that brilliant book, Three Cups of Tea. And I'm forgetting the name of the author at the moment. He's been on our show. But it's an absolutely incredible book about this guy who was injured climbing one of the great peaks there in the Himalayas, and taken into this little village. And to pay them back for nursing him back to health over a year, he started building schools. And he's built, I think, over 60 schools now in these Taliban areas of Pakistan. And as a result of their having education for their children, particularly their girls, they are renouncing the Taliban and embracing the United States and embracing modernity. And this is, I mean, you know, if we want to do away with the Taliban in Afghanistan, or for that matter, back in the day, if we had, you know, I think Obama's answer should have been, and I don't want to pick on Obama at this point. Let's wait until he's president and see if it's appropriate. I mean, maybe he'll do the right thing. But, you know, the answer to the question, what are you going to do about terrorists in Afghanistan, should be, we're going to build Afghani schools, we're going to build Afghani hospitals, we're going to build Afghani infrastructure, and there won't be any terrorists anymore. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Then I saw Mommy tickle Santa Claus underneath his beard so snowy white. What a laugh it would have been if Daddy'd only seen Mommy kissing Santa Claus last night.
34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. TomHartman.com for our live free chat room. I'm hanging out in there myself today here in Grand Rapids doing our show from WTKG. And thanks to all the folks at Clear Channel in Grand Rapids for making the studio available to us. And I will be back home tomorrow. The snow and air gods willing. We'll see. Looks like my flights are delayed. But anyhow, Rich in Cincinnati. Hey, Rich, welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I was confused on why all the calls, you know, because listening to all the you and lots of other guys, on why there's like an 8-to-1 ratio on the calls coming in against the bailout. And a lot of my liberal friends and my own peers are against it, and a lot of them, like my dad, 45 years of working at two different dealerships, Chevrolet. And so I was talking to my dad about it at his house, and I wish I would have never brought it up. My dad got very, very emotional and told me a story that happened when I was 11 years old, and that about that he was offered a job at the regional parts warehouse. He had the recommendation of my grandfather, who was finance manager at a dealership, his boss, his own boss, who was the owner of another dealership, and our great uncle owned a dealership down in Kentucky. And this other guy had been recommended by the UAW and was a line worker and only had 6 years experience. They, of course, chose my dad. The union of the local down there, and I won't give the local, but I can email it to you, told him that he wanted to meet with him. My dad thought it was about joining the union, and when he got there, the guy basically told him, we won't fill any of your orders. The forklift drivers won't pull your stuff off the truck. We'll make your life miserable, and he threatened bodily harm on the family. And my dad said, you know, he hopes Chevrolet survives, but don't ever bring unions up again in our house. They're crooked. And, you know, so I started talking to a couple of his buddies, and most of them are mechanics. And they have the same kind of stories. And then I talked to two of my friends.
Rich, yeah. Enough. I got it. I can give you a lot. You know, I grew up in a union household, and more or less. I mean, my dad, before he worked in tool and die shop back when I was a little kid, I mean, he sold Rexairs door to door and World Book encyclopedias. But I can give you just as many stories of people who were screwed by employers and they had no recourse, of people who were harassed, humiliated, their lives were destroyed, they were unfairly fired by employers and they had no recourse because they had no union. Yes, there are stories out there. I could tell you some from my own childhood. You know, a lot of my friends' parents worked at Oldsmobile on the assembly line, and you know, there are but there are also times when any union has to step up and say, you know, these are our rules. This is the way it is. This is why our members have chosen to be members of our union. And damn it, we're going to stand by that. And, you know, the bottom line is that without unions, so many of the protections that all of us believe that we have, I think most Americans don't realize where these things came from. Things like, you know, the right to overtime, which isn't in all states, by the way. It seems not to be in the states where, you know, in Corker State and in Shelby State and so on. But so many of these rights that we have are gone. I mean, they're just gone. These were all the result of union activity, and they're only in place because there are still some unions left. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, your dad got screwed. You know, I understand. I'm sorry, but that happened. I mean, there's all kinds, like I said, but that doesn't mean that you do away with the union movement. It means that you strengthen and expand the union movement, bring more people into it, and try to work the whole, try to work it all out. But the bottom line is that without labor having some pushback, having the ability to say to management, sorry, but we're in your face. And you were talking about, your family were the owners of these dealerships, and so that's management. Without workers having the right to say, we're in your face, buddy, and you're going to treat us well, then what you end up with is the world of Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge and Bob Cratchit. You've got, the workers coming to the owners and go, oh, please, may I have health care for my son? He's very sick. No, you may not. It'll cost me an extra pence. I mean, that's the world we'll have. That's the world we're moving toward. And so, the thing that you need to be telling Rich, your family members, if assuming that they want to have the conversation, they probably don't. But nonetheless, the way that you push back on this is just pointing that out. Where do you, it's like as I said in the last hours, my brother was saying, the people who don't have union jobs don't realize that the extent to which they have any benefits at all is because there are other people with union jobs and their employers are threatened by the possibility of unionization. And that's why when the Employee Free Choice Act comes before Congress, and it will, you are going to see it's going to make shock and awe look like, I guess comparing it to Iraq, where hundreds of thousands, arguably millions of people have died, is probably inappropriate. But it is going to be you're going to see money raining out of the sky from the National Association of Manufacturers, from the Better Business Bureaus, the Chambers of Commerce, the front groups for the large corporations and the large corporations themselves. You're going to see money raining out of the sky. You're going to see an advertising campaign that's going to make Harry and Louise and the pushback on health care look like it was nothing. I mean, it is going to be absolutely incredible. Carolyn, this is the first shot that we saw last week. Hey, Carolyn. Hi. In Pleasanton, California. What's up?
Hi. I remember the first job I had. I was a tech writer at a computer company, and we'd walk through the manufacturing group, and they would start at 8:30 and leave at 4:30. And we were working 12-hour days, but we were on a salary. So I said, I guess professional means is a euphemism for overtime without pay.
Overtime without pay. It is.
because they tried to use the title as like a way to make us feel better that we were getting screwed. Yep. And I later became an hourly computer contractor for that reason. But I totally get that the union is – I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio with the steel mills. And watching what happened to those people, they got so screwed. Exactly what they're talking about might happen to the car manufacturers. They'd worked their whole life in the steel mill. They put up with this crap. It's hard to stay in the same company year after year after year after year. And then they're 63. The steel company just leaves, and their pension's gone. Everything's gone.
Yeah.
The whole place got decimated. This is like the late 70s, early 80s. And beautiful, beautiful houses turned into crack houses. If you went to Youngstown, you could still buy a house for $2,000. And I'm not joking, the downtown area of Youngstown. And these were gorgeous steel mansions. They've been gutted now, but it's just
I saw the same thing happen to Flint, Michigan when I was growing up, a town just down the road from where I grew up in Lansing. And in fact, large parts of Lansing now, two out of the three Oldsmobile plants that were there when I was a kid have now closed. And, housing values in Lansing have just fallen through the floor as a result. Yeah, it really is.
I see this happening now with the car industry. I can't stand to see it. It's like the whole country will decay the way my hometown decays. And it causes this depression among people that they never get over. Whole town is...
That's the kind of thing, that depression among people that they never get over. That's the kind of thing that William F. Buckley back in the 60s was calling for. That's what Alan Greenspan in 1997, when he told the Wall Street Journal that his job as chairman of the Fed was to, whenever the economy got warm enough, that wages started creeping up, that there was demand for labor, to raise interest rates and cool down the economy to quote Greenspan, a certain minimum necessary level of worker insecurity, end quote, so that the workers wouldn't get uppity, so that the people wouldn't start demanding their rights, so the people wouldn't demand decent wages. Keep it all for the owners and the managers and the CEOs and the stockholders. That's it. I mean, we even have a tax system now where if you're a stockholder, you pay a maximum 15% income tax on the money that you make. If you work in the exact same factory, you pay a maximum 36% income tax. That's crazy. Carolyn, thank you very much. Very, very well said. Earl in Detroit. Hey, Earl, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I was just responding to the man who called a couple calls back who said his father was against, you know, all emotional because of what happened to him, which I'm sure was a very isolated incident with the union. And, you know, I'd have to ask him and anyone that thinks like him, what if this whole thing boils down to them and their views on unions, what do they have against the people that supply the factories that are, you know, or for that matter, in the vicinity of the factories, the restaurants, the stores, you know, the people that supply the toiletries, the uniforms, fill the vending machines. I mean, it ripples throughout the whole economy. The utility companies lose out, and it cascades to the point where it hits people that don't.
Here's the bottom line, Earl. Here's the bottom line. The only thing that drives an economy is wages. Period. And when wages go down, an economy goes down. Now, over the last 28 years, since Reagan declared war on the American worker, wages have gone down. And the only reason the economy didn't tank was because Alan Greenspan and his buddies were pumping credit, were shoving credit. 28 years ago, you didn't get 30 credit card applications a year in the mail. You got none. In fact, it was hard to get a credit card 28 years ago. I remember. 28 years ago, it was hard to get a home mortgage. I remember. And so the only way that they've been able to keep this economy together is by shoving credit at the average working person and taking basically all of their equity. So people have mortgaged their homes up to the hilt. They're no longer buying cars. They're leasing them. They don't have equity in their cars. They don't have savings anymore. Their 401ks are worth half of what they're basically wiped out. That's how they've kept this economy going. And it's reached the end of its limit. Reaganomics is like cancer, and we are in the fourth stage. 45 minutes past the hour.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Tom Hartman here. Hey, guys, do you know the symptoms of an enlarged prostate? Like it or not, you probably will, because eventually it's going to happen to most of us as we get older. If you're urinating more frequently, especially if you're waking up two, maybe three times a night to go to the bathroom, that's the first sign. Second sign might be burning, pain, or even problems in the bedroom. This is not just an old man's concern. It happens to American men more often than in other countries and can occur as young as 30. So don't ignore the symptoms. Get checkups from your doctor and order your risk-free bottle of Beta Prostate to support healthy prostate functioning. Every man should take Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate will help keep your prostate healthy, and it's a natural alternative. You don't need a prescription for it. Call now and order Beta Prostate risk-free. Dial 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Don't put this call off till tomorrow. Call today, 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Ed Schultz.
The biggest story on the face of this earth is America. What do you really think of your workers?
Noon to three.
The partisan divide is alive and well. The attack on the working folk of America is now in full gear. What's the difference between the governor of Illinois selling off a Senate seat,
the Ed Schultz Show,
and some Southern Republican senator protecting his backside for the next election?
Noon to three.
By cutting the head off American auto manufacturers.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, this is Tom Dwyer, 230-2300. Hey, don't be lulled by these short-term gas prices. While we experience this temporary period of cheaper gas, remember what $4 and $5 gas feels like. Dwindling oil resources and corporate greed, the causes of high fuel prices, have not changed. You can trust the oil companies to do one thing, make profit. The oil industry spends more money advertising they're green than actually being green. Executive compensation and advertising spending far exceeds their actual budget for alternatives. Oil is a finite resource, and we're sucking off the bottom of the tank. Not familiar with the term peak oil? Then it's time to learn. What are we willing and able to do for transportation in the future? Tom Dwyer Automotive Services is committed to helping you make your transportation as sustainable as possible, whether it's keeping your vehicle running at its best, converting it to ethanol or biodiesel, or helping you with a decision about moving to hybrids or full electrics, we can help. We'd like to earn your trust and welcome you as a valued client. Please check the detailed video testimonials on our website at tomdwyer.com or just call us at 503-230-2300.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. As we approach the end of the year, be sure to take advantage of your health insurance plan. If you haven't been to the optometrist this year to have your vision checked, call Eyes on Broadway to schedule an appointment before your 2008 benefits expire. Many insurance plans offer generous contributions toward the purchase of contacts or eyeglasses, but if you don't use it, you'll lose it. Make an appointment today by calling 503-284-2300 or visit eyesonbroadway.com.
This is Chris with Powell's Books. Are you looking for meaningful gifts this year that won't break the bank? Let the booksellers at Powell's help you select the perfect item for everyone on your list, whether they're into novels, biographies, cookbooks, or hard-to-find classics. Powell's Holiday Catalog, available in our stores and at Powell's.com, helps narrow your search with gift ideas hand-picked by our staff. Still can't decide? Consider a Powell's gift card, available in any denomination. Visit your nearest Powell's location today or do all your holiday shopping online at Powell's.com.
Hi, Tom Hartman here with a true confession. I'm a picky eater. That's why when I'm on the east side, I go to Hawthorne Fish House. When I'm on the west side, Corbett Fish House, the home of healthy fish and chips. Top quality fish, a light dusting of rice flour and hot rice bran oil seals the fish to an almost greaseless, light, moist fish. And as a bonus for me, it's gluten-free. Crisp salads, Dana's homemade soup, sweet desserts. Hawthorne and Corbett Fish House has a full menu. Hawthorne Fish House Southeast, Corbett Fish House Southwest, where picky eaters eat.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
We tried talking sense, but the man's far too dense. We should have impeached him, but our laws wouldn't reach him. It will be a fine day when the shrub blows away, along with his right-wing crew. And it sure will be nice to pack up Condi Rice and send her to Crawford, too.
One can dream.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, you can't get fooled again. We're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that.
Yeah, welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Alan Rander with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us with our news update for the day. Hey, Alan.
Well, hi, Tom. It looks like the Center for Constitutional Rights and my brother have another win. The Supreme Court got rid of an appeals court ruling that had last December, dismissed a suit by four British men who said they were mistreated while they were detained at Guantanamo. They also said they were denied copies of the Quran, prayer mats. They said that violated a federal act that says the government shall not substantially burden a person's exercise of religion. And the justices said to the Court of Appeals that they should reconsider the suit because now the court has ruled that detainees have some rights under the Constitution.
Wow. So that's great. I mean, you know, another win for your brother and your brother Michael Ratner, who's the president of the or executive director or whatever his title is there with the
president. He's the president.
President of CCR. And what's their website these days? I know it used to be ccr-ny.org.
It's ccr.org. Just look on the Center for Constitutional Rights. Anyway.
Google Center for Constitutional Rights. It's a great organization, and it's really an organization worth supporting. And good on Michael. Please give him our very best and tell him anytime he wants to come on the show to talk about what he's doing, we've got an open microphone for him.
Okay. Also, the Supreme Court rejected an appeal by Stephen Hatfield. He wanted to reinstate his lawsuit against the New York Times. They called him a public figure, but he was never a public figure until all of this stuff came down about him supposedly having anthrax.
He was made a public figure by the government.
Right. And so they basically said he failed to show that Nicholas Kristof was malicious. And also, because he was a public figure, that's the only way that you can sue. But they made him a public figure. It's the catch-22. Also, the Supreme Court turned down another appeal of a suit arguing that the president-elect did not have a right to serve because of his birth.
Right. I'm telling you, this is the beginning of the Clinton wars. You know, they went after Bill Clinton on anything they could find. You know, what, Hillary fired a travel agent? We need to investigate. Appropriate $30 million. You got it. Here you go. And, I mean, it's going to be like that. Anyway, it's begun.
Also, it looks like at Camp Cropper, which is outside of Baghdad, there was somebody that was pronounced dead. It was a detainee. We don't have any more information about this detainee being dead, but they took him to the hospital unconscious, so we don't really know what that is about. Also, the European officials, the European Union people, are saying that they may be willing to increase troops in Afghanistan. So that is going on.
Can you spell Vietnam?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm afraid our friend President-elect Obama may go with the Afghanistan move, and I just don't know.
And if he does, he'll be remembered as the next LBJ. It would be a disaster because LBJ came into office and did some great things socially. I mean, you know, the war on poverty and his Great Society, actually.
If you look in the press room and you come down the stairs, there are these amazing pens that the Great Society, all of the pens that signed all of the acts that came under the Great Society. And I look at that and you say, what a waste. This guy was a brilliant, brilliant guy. I see them every day.
Yeah.
You know?
If only he hadn't decided that he had to have the Vietnam War to prove that he was an anti-communist to the right wingers, basically.
Right.
Anyway.
A couple other things. We have now the right wing is going after the UAW in a huge, huge way. Several senators, Republican senators, are blaming the UAW for the automakers' problems. And so these are the talking points that are being put out. Also, the Department of Justice released their National Drug Intelligence Threat Assessment for 2009. They say that Mexican organized crime is the biggest threat in terms of drug usage in the United States, that cocaine is the leading drug, methamphetamine second leading. Cocaine availability levels actually, though, have dropped. However, domestic methamphetamine production is expected to surpass the 2007 levels when they're done doing this in 2008. The level of domestic cannabis cultivation is high and increasing, and the potency is the highest ever in terms of cannabis.
Yeah, and all of this, in my humble opinion, the result of this misplaced war on drugs. But that's a whole other rant.
Oh, you and I could go there. I'm sure you and I would agree on that one. And nobody could hate drugs more than I do. As you know, I have been very involved in addiction treatment stuff. But we are going about it exactly the wrong way.
Yep, we had Judge Jim Gray on the show last week talking just about that, you know, calling for the decriminalization of most substances. So.
And also, it looks like Carolyn Kennedy is going after the Senate seat. And
really?
What's the
response to people who say, "Oh, come on, what? We have royal families in America. She has no experience. She's never run for political office."
I don't know what the response is. I mean, we do have royal families in America, and the fact is, though, she has written some very brilliant books. And to me, some of the people that get elected to the Senate, I want to scratch my head anyway. So, in my view, it's probably as good as any.
Yeah, I mean, you got folks like John Corzine, who was another former chairman of Goldman Sachs, as I recall, who just basically bought his seat. There's a few out there like that on both sides of the aisle, frankly.
Right, or Tom Coburn, who blames the UAW for all our troubles.
Yeah, exactly. Very interesting. And of course, Mitt Romney, who's getting ready to do the exact same thing and another 4 years for president. Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, in our first hour today, we were talking about how attacks on gays are up, arguably as a consequence of the pro-Prop 8 kind of anti-gay propaganda that's been being spread. And in our second hour, we talked about the guy who threw the shoe at Bush, which I know some folks think exceeds speech by a long shot. In fact, I would argue that it does. On the other hand, what do you do when a man has killed your friends and family comes to town? But let's set that aside for a moment, because that's not purely speech. That's actually action. The famous saying is your right to dislike me ends where your fist touches my nose. David Horowitz is with us, a regular guest on this program. I'm very pleased to have him with us. Conservative writer, activist, founder of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. His website, horowitzfreedomcenter.org. And David, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks, and happy holidays, Tom.
Well, thank you, and the same to you, David. Our topic, our question, what are the limits of hate speech, and at what point should it be criminalized? And I have a feeling that you and I are going to have some areas of agreement and disagreement on this. First of all, let me just lay out what I find incredibly ironic. You know, John Wilson wrote this piece attacking you, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
He gets the facts wrong all the time is a problem.
Here's the irony. Your, you know, one of your campaigns, as it were, has been to arguably to silence political speech on campuses. You're going after, you know,
no,
you're
at, no, it can't even arguably be that, because I have defended I defended Ward Churchill, and I happen to know the governor of Colorado who wanted him fired. I wrote an op-ed piece in the Denver Rocky Mountain News defending Churchill's right to say whatever stupid or reprehensible thing he wants to and not be fired for it. So he just got it wrong. Let me pick up on your opening with the, sure, the shoe thrower. And let me just say at the outset, I don't think there should be, criminal. You don't want to criminalize speech if you can help it. Hate speech is a totalitarian concept, unfortunately. I mean, that doesn't mean there isn't hate speech, but attempting to criminalize it is not a good idea. But the throwing of the shoe, you know, people can get angry, and your statement about Bush murdering all these people. The fact is that, you know, we have a president who gets elected, and as you may have seen,
well, actually, he got appointed.
I've been trying to defend Obama's election against conservatives who want to disqualify him for allegedly not having the right birth certificate.
Right,
I think that's
silly.
Very, very destructive movement. The guy was elected, and we're all at each other's throats kind of ideologically, so we really have to try to have some decorum. Now, Bush was elected. He got both houses of Congress and both parties in their majority to endorse his decision. You may hate to go to war in Iraq. You may hate the decision. You may think.
Well, actually, a majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives did not vote to go into Iraq.
It's the Senate. But the Senate.
Just only in the Senate did a majority of Democrats vote for it. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So the hate him for it and so forth. But you don't want to go throwing things. You know, I'm worried about Obama. I don't know about you, but I think this guy, I don't want to see Joe Biden president. I think Obama, I mean, I happen to think Obama's first moves have been good. But in any case, I don't want to see what it would do to the country to have Obama physically attacked or, you know, God forbid, assassinated. So I think that, you know, what you do is you lower the level when you do something like throw a shoe. What does it accomplish? It makes you feel good, but
it is in their society a what is considered broadly a non-violent. I mean, this is a society where people get shot.
We have too much violence in our society.
Is considered a non-violent. The worst kind of non-violent insult that you can hurl at a person. You know,
what's the point? You know, it's just not the way to do it. You have to say, look, a lot of people voted for Bush. This is what I'm telling, conservatives. Obama got 64 million votes. You can't disfranchise, 64 million people on some, because you feel like it. I mean,
but David Horowitz, in many of on your website and many of your Islamo-fascism awareness campaign on campuses and around the United States, I would argue, and respectfully, that you are turning up the volume on fear and hatred of Muslims broadly in ways that are harmful. Now, I don't want to criminalize that.
Every time I appear, my speech begins with, there are good Muslims and bad Muslims, just as there are good Christians and bad Christians.
Yeah, and Hitler used to say the same thing about Jews.
Oh, what a low blow that was.
It was, but, I mean, you know, it's, it, come on.
No, he didn't say that. Look, I have said over and over again that my campaign is about a movement within Islam that is a minority movement, does not include a majority of Muslims, and hopefully never will.
That we both agree is toxic. But the point where I was going with this is that you're calling in your campaign for the defunding of Muslim programs on college campuses.
No, that's wrong.
You're not. Okay.
I do not call for the defunding of Muslim, organizations on campus.
Yeah.
The Muslim Students Association is a jihadist organization. It is an arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. It preaches hate against gays and against women. Why can't I criticize them without being accused of attacking all Muslims? But, it's weird. It's like I don't know what the analogy is.
So how do we reform it, David? Let's assume for a moment that your detractors are wrong and that what you're saying is just an absolute statement of fact. How do we and the fact of the matter is, in much of the world, I don't know anything, frankly, personally about the Islamic student movement, and so I can't directly speak to that. But I agree with you that there are pockets of Islam, just as there are pockets of Christianity, probably best represented by Timothy McVeigh, who are just plain old off the edge nuts and
yeah.
are using religion as an excuse to, to try to assert power over others in ways that are just plain old flat out wrong.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that the big lesson of the West Bank, when Bush was like, oh, we need to have democracy, you have to have elections there, you need to have elections. Democracy is a good thing. People always love democracy. And then the people voted and they said, yeah, we want Hamas, And Bush is like, whoa, how'd that happen? Well, Hamas had been, giving people oil, they'd been giving them food, they'd been giving them bread, they were building medical clinics, they were building schools.
Let's
go back to the Islamic Student Association. If
yeah.
there is a cancer within those organizations or any organization in the United States, this is a big issue that the British are dealing with. It seems to me that the best way to heal that
the target of the most overt hate on campuses is Jews, not gays, but Jews. At institutions like UC Irvine, it's unbelievable the level of hatred that is spewed against Jews by the Muslim Students Association, which is an arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. It was created. It's one of their allied organizations, and it chooses to send to campuses speakers. They're usually black racists from the Farrakhan movement who are now imams and sheikhs. And it sends them around campuses, and they preach.
So, David,
execute gays.
I get it. We have a half a minute left. Other than shutting them down?
I have never called for shutting down these speeches.
How do you bring these people into the modern world?
I Well, look, I think, a positive suggestion, please. I don't think you can bring David Duke into the modern world, I don't think that you can bring Louis Farrakhan into the modern world. And I wonder if there is a modern world. I mean, religious hatreds and atheism, militant atheism is another kind of religious sect, is rife in our world. And people like yourself who do, despite your rhetoric and probably me despite mine, we understand this. We really have to preach more decorum in our political disputes. You just have to discipline yourself.
It would be
Don't
a good
throw
plan.
Shoes.
Yeah, okay. David Horowitz, HorowitzFreedomCenter.org, the website. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. How do we resolve hatred in our society? Your thoughts after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should, too, today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
Staying on top of what's happening.
The reality of recession might be setting in with those that weren't believing initially.
The news.
Consumers really are using cash.
That's now.
Instead of credit.
And credit is the preferred method of payment online.
We continue to look for additional ways. To make mortgage credit more affordable.
For times like these.
It's going to take time for the system to become unthought.
AM 620.
The R word is something that we haven't mentioned.
But finally it's come to light.
KPOJ.
Here's something to think about. Are you living or are you thriving? Sure, some people like to keep tropical fish, while others like to snorkel with them. And there are people who like to sing in the shower, and those who can't wait to sing at karaoke night. Well, you get what it means to thrive. That's why Kaiser Permanente Senior Advantage offers a plan that helps you get more out of Medicare and more out of life. You can start thriving with our exceptional range of benefits, with conveniently located medical services that save you from running all over town, not to mention low co-pays and practically no paperwork, so you can get on with your life. For more information about our plans, which start at just $39 a month, or to find a seminar near you, call toll-free 1-866-829-3730. Kaiser Permanente. May you live long and thrive. All plans offered and underwritten by Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Northwest, 500 Northeast Multnomah Street, Suite 100, Portland, Oregon, 97232. Kaiser Permanente is a Medicare Advantage organization with a Medicare contract.
If you could increase the effectiveness of your brain, would you do it? If you could discover an easy way to make your brain smarter, stronger, and faster for absolutely no cost at all, would you do it? Well, now you can by requesting a powerful free demo of IQ from Infinite Mind. Right now, when you call, we'll send you an absolutely free demo showing you how easy it is to increase your brain power in as little as 7 minutes. It's called IQ, and it will unleash your mind. Not only that, but you'll be able to read up to 1,000% faster, allowing you to read 10 books in the time it takes others to read one. To increase the effectiveness of your brain in 7 minutes for free, call 1-800-500-3112. What have you got to lose? It only takes 7 minutes. It increases the speed and efficiency of your brain, and you can try it out absolutely free. Call now to get your free demo. Call IQ at 1-800-500-3112. That's 1-800-500-3112.
Interstate Batteries. Cold winter weather can really strain a car battery. Be safe and have yours tested at one of Interstate Batteries' 200,000 dealers nationwide. There's one in every county in the U.S. Find your closest dealer at interstatebatteries.com.
Don't let the cold or wet weather catch you off guard. LesSchwab.com delivers the information you need about winter driving conditions, including mountain passes. Plus, an in-depth look at the products and services we're proud to offer, only at LesSchwab.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Well, the door is always open and the lights on in the hall. Yes, the door is always open, and the light's on in the hall.
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Grand Rapids today, from WTKG here in Michigan. Is it Reed Girard on the line with us? Reed? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Am I pronouncing your name correctly as Reed Girard?
Yeah, it's good enough.
It's good enough. It's R-A-E-D in the middle .blogspot.com is your website. An Iraqi blogger and activist now living in Washington, D.C. And your thoughts on the Iraqi journalist who threw his shoes, Mr. El Zaidi, at George W. Bush?
Well, I mean, I think the majority of Iraqis and majority of Iraqi journalists don't think that's a very journalist worthy thing to do. I don't think people think that's appropriate to do as a journalist or appropriate to do for guests. But I think there is an overwhelming majority of Iraqis who think this was appropriate to do for George Bush. People think of this as a very symbolic and representative statement that represents the overwhelming majority of Iraqi people's sentiment that George Bush was the head of the U.S. government during this occupation that has destroyed Iraq and caused the death and destruction of millions of Iraqis. So people are very much supportive of what happened, not because they support violence, but I guess because it was a symbolic message given very clearly to Bush.
We have a tradition in the United States, I don't know if tradition is quite the right word, but it's probably close to it, of hitting people in the face with a pie as a way of insulting them. I mean, literally walking up to them and putting them a pie in their face. It's happened to the presidents of several of our large corporations. It's happened to a number of politicians over the years by protest groups. And we also have a tradition of not putting people in jail when they do that, of acknowledging that that's a form of speech, although I don't know that any court has ever ruled on that. It's interesting. I had several calls up on the board earlier. I didn't have a time to get to them. Some folks saying, you know, this is violence. This is the equivalent of punching somebody in the face. This is a crime. This guy should be thrown in jail. And on the other hand, saying, no, this is a cultural statement of the horror that has been visited upon the country of Iraq and upon this guy personally, who was himself illegally detained and apparently, at the very least, humiliated and perhaps tortured.
Yeah, I mean, I think to put things in context, many people can argue that what the journalist, what Mr. El Zaidi have done, borders on being violent. I mean, it wasn't violent because it did not hit the president. In case it hit him, it would have hurt him a little bit, maybe, and gave him a black eye or something. But I think looking at the bigger picture, we are talking here about a country that has been put under an occupation for the last 5 years. And that has been fought against for the last 18 years. The U.S. has been fighting with Iraq for the last 18 years, since 1991. And the number of casualties and destruction that happened in the last 18 years, and the number of people who were killed and injured and displaced is enormous.
Yeah.
So talking about what Mr. El-Zaidi did yesterday, that did not cause anyone to be killed or even injured, is very much symbolic in context. It is pretty much symbolic. And it gives a very clear message that Iraqis are against the occupation. They're not happy with what Bush has done in their country. And many people are thinking of this as a highly symbolic day. Maybe it evaluates the entire Bush era in Iraq. Like, it's a message that is that highly symbolic. And we saw today how thousands of Iraqis demonstrated in Baghdad and elsewhere,
right,
supporting him, and how hundreds of lawyers are volunteering to defend him.
Which leads me to the question, and we're talking with Raed Jarar, R-A-E-D, in the middle, .blogspot.com is his blog, an Iraqi journalist, activist, blogger, now living in the United States. Right, where do you think this is going to go? Is this, in fact, there's a story on thinkprogress.org that suggests that George Bush has apparently filed a criminal complaint against this guy, and if he withdraws that complaint, Mr. al-Zaidi can be let out of jail, but right now, according to his friends and family, he might even be being tortured.
Yeah, many different sources from Iraq are confirming that he is being detained, arrested by the Iraqi authorities, and that he was beaten up very heavily, and he is being tortured now and interrogated. Many people think he's actually one of the lucky prisoners, because we're talking about tens of thousands of Iraqis who have been imprisoned in U.S. and Iraqi jails, some of them for years now.
Yeah.
We don't know their names. We don't know, you know, what they're doing. At least with Mr. al-Zaidi, we know his name, and people are asking about him. So it is a huge phenomenon in Iraq, these tens of thousands of people who get detained with no charges, with no warrant, and with no access to lawyers. And
right.
This case is one of many now, yeah.
We just have a half a minute left. I'm sorry. But the video of his showing the throwing the shoe was not played by Iraqi state television. They're trying to downplay this, yet people are out in the streets. Is this going to be a flashpoint for Iraq?
Well, it might be, actually. I mean, you never know what will be the spark that will ignite the gas chamber again.
Yeah.
It might be the thing. And many people are taking it very seriously now.
I think we all should. Raed Jarar, R-A-E-D, in the middle, .blogspot.com is blog. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I much appreciate your perspective and sharing your thoughts with us. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-303-2270. Our number, airamerica.com, tomhartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Turn this country back to the greatness that it once had. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Downright crazy stuff going on out there in the world. It is totally strange. Yep, totally crazy. You know the stories about how, you know, when bears get into neighborhoods that are rural neighborhoods and they have to lure the bear away with peanut butter to get it into a trap, or sometimes even raccoons, things like that. Well, a variation on that story last night. This in Fort Pierce, Florida. A man came home from work, and as he pulls into the driveway, he spots on the roof of his house a drunken woman drinking beer. Yep. And so he calls police, and they come over, and she will not come down until they go get some more beer for her. And she comes down to get the beer. Yeah, it's totally. Oh, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Craig in Linden, Michigan. Hey, Craig, what's on your mind today?
Oh, Tom, it's good to talk to you. You know, I live right outside of Flint. And, you know, I'm so happy to hear you sticking up for the auto industry and the UAW, because, you know, usually I listen to a lot of your other, you know, colleagues on Air America talk.
and they're bashing the auto industry and saying, let them go down. And I'm going, whoa. Yeah. You know, let's think about this. You know,
I haven't done a survey, Craig. I have no idea among my peers who is agreeing or disagreeing with my position. But I can tell you all of the conservative talk show hosts are talking about let the domestic American auto industry go down because they all want to see the UAW and thus the labor movement in the United States destroyed. And it is the worst thing that could happen to the American middle class at this point in time. I can give you a long list of all the things that management at Ford and GM have done wrong. And Chrysler as well. A long list.
I live right outside of there.
That doesn't mean that you kill the goose throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, you know, pick your favorite cliche. It doesn't mean that you do that. What you do is you organize, and first of all, this is a loan. This is not like the $2 trillion that the Fed has passed out and the $350 billion, $335 billion, I guess, so far, that the Treasury Department has passed out to banks where nobody, not once has anybody said, by the way, what's the average salary in your bank? Have you ever heard that question? I've never heard that question. You know, go ahead.
It's funny you brought that up because I was talking to my brother about this morning, and it's like, you know, they're saying how the UAW workers are overpaid and the management is overpaid, and it's like, okay, Rick Wagner makes $27 million, but they didn't say a word about the guys from AIG making like $127 million or all these other guys that were making all this money as compared to the UAW workers.
And continue to, right. All the focus now is on, oh, my God, look at those line workers, how much money they're making. And if people are making enough money to raise a family and buy a house and have a decent middle-class life, God bless them. I'm all in favor of that. And I am just astounded that the conservatives and the Republicans in this country are going to stake their future on destroying the middle class. Dick Cheney is right for once. They are going to be known forever. Or George Bush is going to be, and his party are going to be known forever as the Herbert Hoovers of the day. Well said, Craig. Thank you very much. Ryan in Long Beach, California. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Tom. I was going to mention about the Prop 8 thing, but the Marvin's listening to your show and how you mentioned what would quash evil or negative emotions. I would mention you had a show not too long ago about people who want to die and being in pain, and there was a thing somewhere where they could call and get prescription medication.
It's legal in two states in Washington and Oregon and I believe it was Montana. The Supreme Court of Montana just said that the doctors could not be prosecuted for helping people end their lives,
right?
Voluntarily and intentionally at the in late stage terminal illnesses where they're in great pain.
Right. Well, I find really interesting how when you mention that when they take that prescription home and they actually sit down and look at it, they actually end up most of the time changing their mind. And
yeah, about half the time. They every day they look at it and say, you know, I can go one more day. And they just keep going one more day until they die of natural causes or of the disease. You know.
And I can agree with that because I'm a suicide prevention counselor. And one of the techniques that we do to help somebody, think of an alternative to suicide to actually talk about suicide itself and what's causing the pain, which seems counterintuitive. You don't want to talk about something bad to someone who wants to die. But when you have them talk about that, that actually helps them focus in the here and now. And the reason why that's so effective is because someone who's angry or depressed is stuck in the future or the perception is stuck in the future or the past.
Right.
And I could see how that medication or that taking the medication home works, because when you see that thing in front of you, it grounds you into the moment. And I think that's what's going to help get us out of this routine of negativity, is to focus on the now.
Yeah, that's a good one. Ryan, you are the Eckhart Tolle caller of the day. Well said. Thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Let's see here. Kevin in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, I just want to mention, I mean, there's been a lot of talk of nobody asking about wages of these Wall Street companies. And did you see the article just this year about Goldman Sachs set a world record for average pay? That means everybody from the guy in the mailroom to the CEO, their world record average. It was the first time that average pay had surpassed $500,000 per person.
Wow. Yeah, I remember seeing that and reporting on it, and I had completely forgotten it. And thank you for reminding me, Kevin. And nobody is saying...
It's so hideous when I hear that they're, you know, they're bringing in all these additional costs to try to claim that the automakers make $71 an hour, which, you know, a lot of information that Air America is getting out there says, oh, come on, that's not true. They're making 26 like Toyota. Yep. But when you factor in all these things like the health care costs that shouldn't be there.
Well, and the pensions that the workers themselves paid into during the 20, 30 years that they were working in order to qualify for the pension. I still have yet to see anybody honestly pull those numbers back out, because these workers paid into these pensions and arguably even their health care benefits. They could have taken that as wages. And in most cases, they said, you know, we'll take $15 an hour plus. I mean, back in the day, right, 20, 30 years ago, when that was actually good money, we'll take $15 an hour plus health insurance instead of the $17 an hour that we originally were asking for. I mean, these are all
plus,
things reversed out of pay.
Plus, they want to shed these costs ever since the first airline went bankrupt.
Yep.
And got to shed their pension plan.
Yep.
And there's a little-known similar program that picks it up with taxpayer dollars. It's not FDIC, but there is a government program.
The Pension Guarantee Corporation is what it's called. And yeah, you're absolutely right, Kevin. But the problem is that the Pension Guarantee Corporation, a federal organization, sort of like the FDIC, is underfunded right now, given the obligations that they're facing. And if the big three go down, it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be an absolute disaster. Miguel in New York City. Hey, Miguel.
Yeah, hi. I just want to talk about something that, you know, I don't hear people talk about frequently, and I think it's a big issue, which is basically just the digitalization of culture, the digitalization of business. You know, you were talking earlier about, you know, the need to get back to a product-based economy, working, having people work to produce things in the real world, and, you know, getting away from an economy that's just based on, you know, kind of, you know, equation systems and digital numerics,
right,
and all of this sort of thing. And, you know, I mean, the question that I have for you is that how do you introduce those kinds of values back into a system that has basically defined itself in the last 30 years based on this kind of utopian model of, you know, that's been brought to us by digital technology? I mean, how do you bring that back into to vogue, so to speak? I mean,
well, the easy example is to point out that the digital technology exists. It doesn't exist in outer space. It exists on a platform that is manufactured. That there is no wealth until somebody makes something. Somebody has to make the fiber optic cables that are all over the United States. Somebody has to make the routers and switches. Somebody has to make the computers. And now, increasingly, all of that stuff is being made in Asia and brought into the United States. And so we're not even creating the wealth, which is the structural underpinning of the intellectual wealth that we're talking about. So that would be my answer to you, Miguel. That's the way that I would do it. Larry in Okeechobee, Florida, listening on Winds. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Tom. That's Okeechobee, Florida. I was listening to your interview with David Horowitz, and I've heard you have lots of right wingers on before who are articulate and can make their case. And I didn't think he made a single. He couldn't even finish a sentence. He really didn't make a point, I thought, on anything. So, you know,
well,
it's not
about who does or doesn't. The question in my mind, which I don't think David has an answer to, and I frankly don't either, is how do we bring the Tim McVeighs of the world and the Osama bin Ladens of the world, and these are obviously extreme examples, but the United States is full of, you know, folks in a whole variety of different religions and not religions, you know, even philosophies. How do you bring the hardcore out in the fringe folks into the mainstream? You know, how do we reach out to them?
And Horowitz said David Duke and Farrakhan, you'll never bring them into the modern world, and I agree, but about their followers? It's not them, it's the followers. I would guess that 25-30% of their followers are hardcore believers, and the rest, like the Bush supporters, are 25%. The other 75% is who you're going after.
Excellent point.
Who could be reasoned with.
Right. Excellent point, Larry. Thank you very much. And perhaps even discrediting the leadership as being basically crazy, rather than being, you know, noble criminals, but crazy. It's a good way to do it.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
As the price of gas goes up, some of you are turning to other fuels and other modes of transportation, whether it's biodiesel or a bicycle. Thank you. But for those who are still looking for a deal on gas, we've got the answer. Go to 620kpoj.com and click on Cheap Gas Finder. That's where you'll find service stations with the lowest prices on gas in the area. You can even search by zip code. And to help you stretch your mileage, 10 fuel saving tips. It's the Cheap Gas Finder from Portland's only progressive talk station, AM 620kpoj. Here's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ.
Zoo Lights, presented by Boeing, is back at the Oregon Zoo. See the zoo transformed into a winter wonderland, aglow in a sea of a million lights. Animated animals, entertainment, a holiday buffet, and a lighted zoo train make Zoo Lights Portland's premier family holiday event. Information at 620kpoj.com, keyword zoo. Support the Sustainable Business Network this holiday season. Experience the fun and fulfillment that comes from an authentic place, your own community. And choose holiday gifts from locally owned stores, restaurants, and service providers. Info at 620kpoj.com, keyword local. Looking for some local fun and festive events to attend this holiday season? Look no further than 620kpoj.com, keyword festive. You'll find information on Portland's Saturday Market, Zoo Lights, the Oregon Zoo, the Pittock Mansion, and more. It's all at 620kpoj.com, keyword festive.
And that's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station.
Does your company need a new facility? I'm about to tell you something you might not believe, something the conventional construction companies don't want you to know. You can save a surprising amount in both time and money with a new premium quality building. How? Talk with Anthem Steel about a pre-engineered steel building. For valuable free information, just call 1-800-500-8193. Not only does an Anthem Steel building save you time and money, it's also fully customizable. Choose the size you want. Even choose the look of brick, stone, or stucco. And you won't believe how much you can save over conventional construction. This is information traditional construction companies don't want you to know. But if you're on the verge of building a new space, choose a sturdy, pre-engineered steel building from Anthem Steel and put all that extra time and money where it belongs, back into your business. For valuable free information, call 1-800-500-8193. That's 1-800-500-8193. 1-800-500-8193.
Alaska Airlines. Spend less on Alaska Airlines and Horizon Air as they welcome your first bag free of charge. Visit AlaskaAir.com.
Music Millennium has over 100,000 gift ideas, including the largest recorded music selection in the Northwest, music and movie DVDs, vinyl, vintage toys and games, and other unique gift ideas. Happy holidays from Music Millennium, located at 32nd and East Burnside.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
And a half minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you in part by the Teamsters. proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, Teamster.org, their website, that's singular. And Joseph Cerencioni is on the line with us. He's the president of the Plowshares Fund, and he contributed a chapter to the new book edited by Mark Green and Michelle Jolin called Change for America, a progressive blueprint for the 44th president, laying out some very specific suggestions for things, particularly in different cabinet areas, that that the incoming Obama administration and specifically President-elect Obama can do when he becomes president. And one of these has to do with Cold War weapons. Joseph Cerencioni, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. What's the website, by the way, for the Plowshares Fund? I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me.
No, that's okay. It's plowshares.org.
Okay.
It's spelled the Irish way, P-L-O-U-G-H, Plowshares.
Great. Thank you very much. The Cold War is long gone, but the weapons are still floating around. And in fact, more are being made, it seems, every year. I'm not sure the status of the U.S. and Russia in that regard, but, you know, other countries around the world as well. What do we do about this deadly legacy, sir?
Yeah, we've got ourselves about 10,000 nuclear weapons. 5,000 of those are actually in what they call the operational stockpile, and about 1,500 of those are still on hair trigger alert, ready to launch in 15 minutes notice. So basically, the Cold War posture. And the really bad news is that Russia has a similar arsenal with a similar number poised on missiles ready to launch in 15 minutes notice. So you've got three kinds of dangers. One is the danger of some kind of accident or miscalculation that could put these weapons into use, either by us, U.S. and Russia have most of the world's weapons, or third countries like India or Pakistan, two nuclear-armed neighbors currently in a very tense standoff. You have also the danger that terrorists might get access to these supplies of nuclear material around the world and use them against us. And finally, and this is the one that gets the most attention, that some new countries will acquire these weapons. Of course, North Korea and Iran are the two at the top of the list. But if they actually do acquire these weapons, their neighbors are certainly to follow suit. So you, as president, you have to have a comprehensive policy that addresses the dangers of the existing weapons, the possible terrorist acquisition of these weapons, and have policies to prevent any new states from getting them. I'm actually fairly confident that the incoming president-elect Obama does have such a comprehensive policy, and he's going to have to be engaged in a conscious and sustained effort to implement that new policy.
Yeah. And by the way, also information about the book over at AmericanProgressAction.org, that website as well for the American Progress Fund. Joseph Cerencioni, what would the details of that be?
Well, first he's got to have, you know, the way the president's going to confront this, he's going to come into the office after inaugural parades and balls and speeches and find this inbox full of issues pressing, demanding his attention. At the top of that list will be issues like Iran and North Korea, things he can't avoid. He'll have to make decisions on nuclear weapons budgets. Is he going to continue to spend $54 billion a year, which is what we currently spend on nuclear weapons and related programs? And he's going to have some policy decisions to make on whether he's going to implement his promises for the early ratification of the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, something Bill Clinton negotiated, but the Republican Senate blocked. Is Obama's pledge to ratify it? Is he going to do it? I believe you're going to see President Obama turn first to the issue of nuclear terrorism. It's the number one threat. We have programs that can actually prevent terrorists from getting these weapons, and I think you'll see the president posture as a strong president, position himself as a strong president, one who's able to actually defend the American public from the real threats. He will probably quickly pivot from that to issues of reducing the existing stockpiles, look for early negotiations to start with Russia on mutual and verifiable reductions in our arsenals. And finally, I expect him to turn to this issue of the test ban, where he will seek to build a bipartisan consensus in the U.S. Senate to get ratification in 2009 or early 2010.
You know, in 61, in his farewell address, Eisenhower talked about his prayer for peace and that we could have a world built on mutual trust and love. of all things, for a Republican president to say. And just a brilliant speech. John Kennedy, a year and a half later at Michigan State University, gave a speech on peace in which he said, you know, we are not incapable. He used a better word than that. I forget what it was before that task. And of having a world at peace. To what extent is this a possible reality? If we stop the bellicosity, we stop the angry rhetoric, the warlike rhetoric, in fact, stop using war as a metaphor for everything, war on drugs and everything else, and really promote the concept of mutual disarmament, mutual trust, and world peace. I mean, is this conceivable, or is this just starry-eyed New Age stuff?
No, not only is it conceivable, not only is it urgent for our leaders to constantly present that vision, to present that at least as a goal for us, but we're actually making tremendous progress towards this goal. And we've had so much experience, particularly in the last 8 years, of fear-mongering, of leaders using and exaggerating fears to get us to commit to policies and wars that we otherwise never would have done. But when you start to look at the facts, there are actually fewer wars in the world now than there were previously. There are fewer nuclear weapons in the world now, fewer countries trying to get them. Yes, we can eliminate nuclear weapons. Yes, we can prevent war. We need a president who will lead us in that direction.
Yes, we can. Joseph Cirincione, president of the Plowshares Fund, plowshare.org, AmericanProgressAction.org. His contribution to Mark Green, a book edited by Mark Green, Change for America, Progressive Blueprint for the 44th President. Joseph, thanks for dropping by today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And we will be back tomorrow from somewhere. My flights are really badly delayed. I don't know if we're going to be doing our show from Chicago or Portland, but we'll be back. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. We'll see you tomorrow. Tag, you're it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.